A very good morning to you, Namibian. Good morning to you, my dear listeners. Welcome to Eagle FM. So, yeah. Good morning, Namibian. So, I missed you. all of you. I missed you. There are those who text me actually saying, hey, where are you? So, I'm here. I'm back. And let me take off my hat to Dwight for always, you know, stepping in, you know. Thank you, Dwight. And welcome to Unpacking the Day. Good morning to you, wherever you find yourself in this beautiful land of ours, this land of the brave. It's a Wednesday morning, the 24th of September. We're heading towards the end of the month. So September is almost over. It's almost getting there. So good morning to you and welcome to Unpacking the Day. My name is Mark Oshoveli and this is your daily dose of what is really going on in terms of business, economic and politics. Every weekday, we cut through the noise to make sense of the big stories, trends and numbers making headlines. So we keep it clear, a little witty, and always curious, asking the question that matter and giving you the fresh take on what people are saying out there. So the views shared during our segment don't necessarily reflect those of Eagle FM, and we are here to unpack what others are saying and spark meaningful conversation so you can be part of the bigger conversation. So this is your space to unpack the headlines and get to the heart of the stories. So our time is about 4 minutes past the hour of 8. And if you're just joining us, thanks for choosing Eagle FM and for joining us here this morning on Unpacking the Day. As usual, so today is the 24th of September. So our first segment is looking at what happened on this day in Africa. What happened on this day in Africa, the 24th of September. So on this day, the Guinea-Bissau unilaterally, you know, declared its independence from Portuguese colonial rule. So this move was actually very pivotal moment in the decolonization movement across Africa, inspiring other nations to seek self-determination and sovereignty. And also, in response to widespread unrest in Zaire, now the Democratic Republic of the Congo, Belgian forces launched Operation Blue Beam on September 24th in 1991. So this intervention aimed to restore order in the capital, Kinshasa, following riots and mutinities. So now today is the South Africa, in South Africa, it's a Heritage Day or formerly known Shaka Day, a national public holiday celebrating cultural diversity and heritage. Originally, the 24th September was known as Shaka Day in KwaZulu-Natal, commemorating King Shaka Zulu, who united various Zulu clans in the early 19th century. So Heritage Day was established in 1995 by the post-apartheid government to celebrate the diverse cultural heritage of all South African, promoting the national unity. So the day encourages citizens to honor their cultural traditions, history, and contribution as a part of the Rainbow Nations. So today is Heritage Day or Shaka Day in South Africa. So, well, that's all what we have for you on this day in Africa. Wednesday, September the 24th, what is our thought for the day? What is our thought for the day? So our thought for the day today is show me your friend and I will show you your character. Show me your friend and I will show you your character. So the proverb means that a person's true character and values can be understood by looking at the company they keep. Yeah? Friends are often reflect shared beliefs, behaviors, and attitudes. So the kind of people someone chooses to associate with reveals important insight about their own personality and integrity. So essentially, it warns that one's friends are mirrors of one's own character and can influence how others perceive them or perceive you. So show me your friend and I will show you your character. So be careful who you choose to be your friend, because they reflect your behavior, they reflect your behavior, your beliefs, and your attitudes. So, the friends you keep are the mirror of your character and can also influence how other people perceive you. So, yes, that's our thought for the day. Show me your friends and I will show you your character. So hopefully that would help you in the decision and choices you make during the course of the day today. So good morning. If you're just joining us, our time is about 8 minutes past the hour of eight. I will be with you until the hour of 10 o'clock when I will be handing over to Mr. Franz. So what you can expect today, in today's show? So, there's an interesting story. The three Western African countries who actually quit the UN top court, the ICC. So I want us to look at that at a different angle. That's one thing, that's a story that I want us to get in. And the other stories are more, you know, we go to New York. There's so many things happening in New York at this time. So we have African call for a seat on the UN Security Council, which is our president actually, you know, spearheading that. And also the president also, when you have a president outside, sometimes they say things that they wouldn't say when in the country. So Namibia is to fix investment law to attract investors. So we're going to look also into that. Well, if we have time. So that what you can expect today in our show this morning. So make sure that you unpack this with me and stay tuned. We will be back.
Omutiha would take a kaguna, e matina omjo. Chicago Shafas and Anana, Longishifa, yes, you came or she wanna. E moyao, or tango got his amen. Anagashifa, Yanamibia, Ombitom Banawa, Orangica. Seisanina, Omeguro, Nidanitoma, Yue, Yongishifa, Yokupitramo, Igle FM Media House. Gwe 20 Mimeha, Uka Kombanga Nina. Kara onkwashi pareki uimwe po yomo programa letu. Moambo dengera selma onora heta tuimwe. Datu ndatu heari hamano tano oliaj. Igle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts or previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Yes, this is your number one top radio station, talk radio stations. And as they said, as just the advert said, stay connected with Eagle FM. And you can do that definitely by downloading Eagle FM mobile app. You know, wherever you are, you will be connected. And you won't miss, your favorite program. So make sure that you download that, and there's so much on that Eagle FM app, many features, and especially those who are into business, into economics, into, you know, knowing what other companies are doing in terms of their report and all that. So, and also vacancies. We still also, November is up. It's very close. Elections, the elections are coming up. So maybe you just want to review again what your political party is up to, what it promises to deliver. So yeah, get there. Yeah, you will find some of this. And it's updated almost every day. So there's always a new, something new every day. So make sure that you download the Eagle FM app and get updated with what is going on. All right. The other, you know, please also, today is also, it's Wednesday. And, you know, if you also looking for, you know, that latest business or economic or political news, get yourself a free copy of The Villager. All what you need to do is just subscribe. And how do you subscribe? You just simply send a WhatsApp message with your name and email to 081-200-4144. And voila, that's it. That's all what you need to do. And The Villager is published every Wednesday, every Monday, Wednesday and Friday. So the e-newspaper is sent to you every Monday, Wednesday and Friday. And please, while we're at that, do also follow The Villager on The Villager and Eagle FM on our social media platform. Make sure that you share, you like, you comment on our social media platform. So we are on X, on LinkedIn, on Instagram, Facebook, and the rest. So make sure that you please do follow Eagle FM and The Villagers. And also for those who want to advertise your business, well, here we are. And maybe you want to advertise your event or a function, a workshop, a business meeting, whatever it is. And sometimes you want to do that in real time. So through live streaming or broadcasting. So then you can contact our office, 083-288-400. So welcome. If you're just joining us, you just actually tune in to Unpacking the Day on Eagle FM. And we live right from direct from the Ondangwa studio. So we will be back after this.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace.
When you choose UNAM,
you get credible accreditations.
You get internationally recognized qualifications.
You get a university with a growing reputation.
When you choose UNAM,
you get a head start on local jobs.
You become connected in a growing Namibia.
You stay in the best country in the world.
Because you already know you love it here.
Open your mind to UNAM.
And UNAM will open the world to you.
UNAM is your university, Namibia.
Because the U in UNAM is you.
So very good morning to you, wherever you find yourself in this beautiful land of the brave. And welcome back to Unpacking the Days, where we take a deep dive into the stories shaping our world and crucially how they might touch us right here at home in Namibia. My name, I'm Michael Chevelli, and this morning we are heading all the way to West Africa, to a region many of us might only see on the weather map or in news bits and pieces about security concerns, you know, so in that region. But what happened there, especially on the international stage, can have a ripple effect. And we all need to understand. And what happened there is very, very, very important. And I want us to get into it. Today's big story, or rather three big stories rolled into one, come from Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger. Now, These three Western African nations, all currently led by military government, just note that all of these currently are led by military government, following the recent coups in their countries, have announced they are washing their hands of the International Criminal Court, the ICC. So they said they are calling it an instrument of neocolonialist repression. An instrument of neocolonialist repression. So, and they say they are out, effective immediately. It's like someone resigning. You know, it doesn't even wait for a month. It doesn't even give a notice, you know. So it said they are out, effective immediately. Ooh. So now, for those, the ICC, for those who might not be familiar, so it's the UN top court based in the Hague, famous Hague. So its mission, what does it do? It's, since its establishment, it was established in 2002. The ICC was established in 2002. Its mission is actually to prosecute the most heinous crime. So the most heinous crime, those who are committing genocide, crimes against humanity, war crimes, act of aggression. So that was the mission, to prosecute the most heinous crimes in the world. Now, think of it as an ultimate court of last resort when national justice system fail or are unwilling to act. So if your national justice system fail actually to provide justice or unwilling to act, then that's where now the Hague, the ICC, comes in. Now, but here is the... here's now the interesting part, okay? These three African nations are saying
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM.
All right, welcome back. Just sorting out someone is calling on my door already. What do you want all this time? Good morning.
Morning, how are you?
I'm fine, and yourself?
Very good, sir.
Yeah.
Please, can you get me off?
I'm on air now. Is it something that's urgent?
Yes.
All right, just hold on.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye. The eye.
Omutiha utekirwa kaguna imatina omjo chikao shafasa na nana longeshifa ya ishiwike moshiwana iye moyao ota ingongotisa mwene anageshifa ya Namibia ombito ombwa na wa olonjika zeitha nina omayakuro nirandithoma yoe yongeshifa yoe okupitiramo Eagle FM Media House ngoe tuende tuimemeha uka kombanga nina.
All right. So welcome back. So we just had some emergencies that we need to attend to. Okay. Welcome back. Now, we're talking about, you know, I was just explaining what is actually the mission of the ICC. So since it was established in 2002, is to prosecute the most, heinous crimes. So things like genocide, crimes against humanity, war crimes, or any other act of aggressions. So now here's the most, here's the interesting part. So these three African nations are saying the ICC is the problem, not the solution. So they're saying the ICC is the problem, not the solution. So they claim it is incapable of delivering justice, and worse, that it is biased, especially targeting less privileged, privileged countries. So they're saying, well, the problem is actually ICC. They are not the solution. They are the problems because, well, first of all, they are incapable of delivering justice. And also, worse is that they are biased, especially to less privileged countries. So now they want to create what they call indigenous mechanism for the consolidation of peace and justice. So indigenous mechanism, let's just shorten it, indigenous mechanism. So the indigenous mechanism for the consolidation of peace and justice. So now, I think that's a powerful phrase. So it suggests a desire for homegrown solutions. So free from outside interference. That's what it suggests. So they want a mechanism that is actually homegrown, focusing on local solution, which without any interference from outside. Now, okay. So, and we have to understand that this is not just a sudden outburst. All right. This actually echoes the sentiments we have heard before, particularly from leaders like Rwandan President Paul Kagame, who has openly accused the ICC having, you know, anti-African bias. So, and when you look at the ICC record, if you look at now the ICC record, that criticism actually gained some power. I think it's legitimate. Out of 33 cases initiated since its inception, 32 have involved African countries. 32 out of 33. So involved African countries. So, and that statistic, that is really hard to ignore. It's really hard to ignore in terms of now being biased, okay, in terms of being accused, being biased and so on. And so now if you were a country in Africa, now you look at that statistic, if you were a country in Africa, seeing that ratio, you know, 32 out of 33 countries involved African country. If you were in Africa, if you're an African country, you know, a country in Africa, and you're seeing that ratio, wouldn't you start to question things? Wouldn't you start questioning things? So now let's unpack this, okay? Let's now unpack this whole story. What does it mean when the three countries, in a coordinated move, and remember, these are the same three countries that recently pulled out of the regional bloc, ECOWAS. So they pulled out of the regional bloc, ECOWAS, demanding democratic rule be restored. The ECOWAS were demanding that the democratic rule be restored in these countries. So they decided to quit. Now they decided to quit the world's highest court for international justice. Just put this together. Think. I want you to, you know, put yourself in the frame. All right? So they pull out of the highest court for international justice. They also pull out of their own regional bloc, ECOWAS. So what is going on? What is really happening? So, but would it also, the other things that you're asking yourself, does this set a precedent? You know, that anybody can just do what they want, you know, how they want it, or you know, many questions maybe that need to be, you know, to be discussed here. Now let's get into it. The leaders of Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger, they are painting a picture of the ICC as a tool, you know, a tool used by powerful nations to control weaker ones. You know, they are saying it is ineffective and frankly hypocritical. So they point to its inability to prosecute proven war crimes, you know, crimes against humanity and so on. So they said they are unable to do that. So they want to take justice into their own hand now. So these three countries, they want to take justice into their own hands. So, well, on the surface, you know, on the surface, this sounds like a bold declaration of sovereignty. They want, you know, because you want to take justice in your own hands, sovereignty, your independent country, and reclaiming of power. They kind of like a bold declaration of sovereignty and also a reclaiming of power. Okay? And probably there are a lot of, you know, of us or those or others who are cheering them to say, yeah. Huh? And who wouldn't want to administer justice in their own way? Who wouldn't? Tailored to their own context. Who wouldn't want that? We all want to administer justice in our own way, tailored to our context. That's reasonable, isn't it? So, but I want us to put on on our, you know, that critical thinking hat, you know, that cap. I have one on. Let me just straighten it. Okay. So let's put on our thinking cap, okay? The critical thinking cap. And really, now look at this more in a thinking way, okay? In a very critical way. So when this country talk about neocolonialist repression, what are they really referring to? What are they referring to? So now the ICC was established after immense international pressure and human rights advocacy. So it was meant to be, a shield against impunity. So the way it was established now, it was now to be a shield against impunity, a place where perpetrators of the worst crime could be held accountable, regardless of their power. It doesn't matter whether you are Putin, Vladimir Putin, or you are, Trump, or you are Kabila, or you are, you know, Ramaphosa, it doesn't matter who you are. So, regardless of their power. Now, the assumption here is that the ICC should focus on African nations because those are the places where these crimes are happening. Now, you can ask, is it evidence of bias? Or is it a reflection of a grim reality of the on the ground in those specific regions? So that's something that we need to think. Is it evidence of bias? Okay, that now the ICC focus more on African nations because those are the places where these crimes are happening. Now we have to think: is this a biased way of looking at things? Is it this only way this is happening? Or is it also a reflection that this is a reality on the ground in those specific regions? So, unpack with me. And then, just think about that, you know. And then there is the other side of the coin. Now, the ICC, despite its flaws now, okay, represent an international standard of justice. So despite its biasness or whatever the case may be, so it represents an international standard for justice. Now, by withdrawing, are this nation not also withdrawing from that global commitment to accountability? Just think about it. What happened to the victims of potential war crime within this country? If they are happening, what happened to them? Now, if they have, let's say, for example, their national justice system, now, especially under the military rule, are unable and unwilling to prosecute. So what happened to that commitment to the accountability? Now, this is happening now. This is now happening in their own country. The, let's say, for example, the victim of potential war crimes happening within their country. In their national justice system, well, and remember, it's under military rule, so are unable to, unwilling to prosecute. Now, I want you to look at the context, okay? Let's look at the context. Now, let's look at the context. These three countries are in the Sahel region, all right? A hotspot of instability. That's a fact. Okay? Now, their armies are themselves facing, their armies are themselves facing accusation of crimes against civilians. Often in the context of fighting jihadist group like linked to Al-Qaeda and ISIS respectively. So when they say they want to create their own indigenous mechanism, I mean, we have to ask, will this mechanism be truly independent and impartial? Or will they serve to protect the very regimes accused of these abuses? Those are some of the things that some of the questions maybe we need to ask. We are trying to engage. I would try to get your thought on this. So, and we'll be opening up the lines shortly. But for now, let's consider the implication. Okay? I'll open up the line, but let's now consider the implication. Now, these countries have also deepened their ties with Russia. And it is worth noting that the ICC has issued an arrest warrant for Russian President Vladimir Putin over alleged war crimes in Ukraine. So, just think. So they deepened their ties with Russia. But, you know, Russia is also, you know, has issued an arrest. ICC has issued an arrest warrant for Russian president. So he's also alleged war crime in Ukraine. Now you have to think: is this withdrawal partly about preempting potential future scrutiny? Because Mali, since 2013, is investigated. And perhaps now it's kind of like their withdrawal, you know, is their withdrawal partly about preempting potential future scrutiny or perhaps aligning with a geopolitical bloc that is also critical of the ICC? So now these are complex questions and there are no easy answers. So now let's dive a bit deeper into the indigenous mechanism argument, all right? Just to give some clear understanding then. Now, on one hand, it's a valid point, okay? I just want to make that. On one point, it's a valid point that justice system should be rooted in a local context and values. So that's actually a valid point. So the ICC, as we know, with its Western-centric legal framework, can sometimes feel alien, you know, sometimes can feel alien or imposed. Just think about, okay, you can think about our traditional justice system in Namibia, our own customary laws and ways of resolving dispute. So these are, immense value. There's immense value in that. The argument here is that these Sahelian countries are seeking to revive or adapt such a system to deal with modern atrocities. So however, the criticism from the proponent of the ICC is that indigenous mechanisms can too easily become a smokescreen for impunity. It can easily become a smokescreen for impunity. So, now, for instance, now, in the past, some countries have used traditional reconciliation process to bypass accountability for serious human rights violations, essentially sweeping them under the rug in the name of national unity. So, now, the UN-owned International Law Commission has highlighted the importance of national jurisdiction being dubbed the primary enforcer of international law. They should be. So, but it emphasized that this should not come at the expenses of accountability. It should not come at the expenses of accountability. If the nation system is unwilling or unable, the ICC is meant now to step in. So that's what the whole thing is now. I want to consider this scenario. Let's consider this scenario. Now, just to give you clear also, just to make you clear, let's consider this scenario. Now imagine a commander in one of these countries is accused of ordering, okay? Is accused of ordering indiscriminate attack on a village. Imagine now, one of these, maybe those are, both of them are the chief in command. Let's have accused of ordering indiscriminate attack on the village. If that country's own court refused to prosecute, or if the military government simply declares the matter, you know, the matter is closed. The matter is closed under the disguise of national security or indigenous justice. Now, what remedy do the victims have? So what remedy do the victims have? So the ICC, now, imperfect as it may be, provide a global avenue for seeking redress. It actually provides that global avenue for seeking redress, for seeking remedy. Without it, they might have none. Now, the victims may have none. So we have two strong viewpoints emerging here, almost like two sides of a coin. Okay, on one side, before I let you come, on one side, the argument is that the ICC is a relic of a bygone era, a tool of Western power used to exert influence and control over developing nations, particularly in Africa. And the statistic of 32 out of 33 cases involving African country is presented as irrefutable evidence of this bias. Now, the call for indigenous mechanism is seen as a legitimate assertion of sovereignty and a desire for justice that is relevant to their cultural and political realities. So that's on one side. That's one viewpoint. Okay? This viewpoint argues now that, and this differs that it argues that these nations are taking back control of their own destinies and their own just systems, free from the external interference. So now, who benefits in that kind of view? The government of these nations, who can potentially avoid international scrutiny for their actions, and they consolidate power. So now, probably who loses? If you have to think, who loses in that? Potentially, if there are atrocities that are done, victim of those atrocities is, if genuine accountability is sacrificed for the political convenience. So those are the people that would actually not maybe benefit if for the sacrifice of political convenience. All right. Now, Let's get on the other side before I let you come through. So on the other side, the counter argument is that while the ICC may have its flaws and biases, it represents a crucial global effort to combat impunity for the most horrific crimes. So now withdrawing from the ICC, especially by nation facing internal conflict and accusation of abuses by their own armies, open the door to complete lack of accountability. So now the indigenous mechanism could easily become a way to shield perpetrators from justice. So this viewpoint suggests that the focus on Africa country might be a reflection of where these crimes are occurring rather than inherent bias. So it's not because it's bias, it's just because this is where the crimes are actually taking place. So the ICC, in this view, is necessary last resort. So, and if we look into this view, who benefits from this? Victim of war crimes, who would otherwise have no hope of justice. So, yeah, and probably now, this is what the government, these regimes are afraid to lose. You know, the regime accuses of these crimes would be the losers in this view, who prefer actually to operate without international oversight. So the fact that these three Sahelian countries are now a bloc of three, united in their withdrawal from both ECOWAS and ICC, and strengthening ties with Russia, suggests a deliberate geopolitical realignment, I think. So it's a clear signal to the West and their influence, to the West, that their influence is weakening in this volatile, actually, region. So we're going to open up the phone lines now, and I want to hear from you. Now, what do you make of this news, you know, of this news from West Africa? Now, do you see the withdrawal, okay? Just think, I want you to think as you come through. So do you see the withdrawal from the ICC as a bold step toward true African sovereignty, or a dangerous move that opened the door to impunity? How do you see that? And when this leader talk about neo-colonialist repression, does that resonate with you, perhaps based on your own historical experience or observation of the global power dynamics? So does that resonate with you? So what are your thoughts on the idea of indigenous mechanism? We'll be back.
Titanium, the perfect fit between platinum and silver, complementing our existing benefit options. We always offer a comprehensive healthcare experience. NHP, the premier member-centric medical aid fund. Visit NHP today at nhp.com.na. NHP, we're about you.
No matter.
All right. So please, what are your thoughts on the idea of indigenous mechanism for justice? Could they work, or are they more likely to be used as a shield? Now, you can come through, give us a call now and share your perspective. 0808, the number is 0833-66091. And we are live on air, and we want to hear your voice on Unpacking the Day. So you can come through now. 0833-66091.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Good morning, how are you?
I'm fine, and yourself?
Fine, thank you. Thank you. You are welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you.
And we thank God to energize you to come back. And now, more.
I appreciate that. You know, when you reach my age, you know, things start to happen.
Most of you guys, you always complain about the age. But I think the age that is more resourceful.
Yeah.
Because you have time on your own. You have time on you with your community members.
Yeah.
The masters on the ground. I think you should. That's why people say when you reach this age,
yeah,
that is the age that you can utilize better.
Let me tell you one thing that happened. This is funny. You know, we use, and I'm going to say it here anyway, what happened to me, that, you know, I did exercise, and then I had a little bit of pain in the back, you know, that twitch, a twitch in the back. And then the next day I asked one of my son, you know, I said, inimanyango kuja, tumbenge pombuda. So what happened, I think it hurt something, and then the next morning I couldn't even stood up. I couldn't.
Yes, because you are not accustomed to that.
Yeah.
Every time my mother calls at the children, she asks when she comes from work, and then we have to massage her.
Yeah.
And we do all these things. Meme Matriat knows how to do that.
Yeah.
And we become more, we become more potential to add to the values of our economic growth.
Yeah. Now, okay, so let's get back to the topic. So what is your contribution this morning?
Okay, yes, let me greet you once more again.
Yeah.
The issue of indigenous mechanism.
Yeah.
So you just mentioned that, and we don't know whether you are talking about indigenous mechanism in terms in relation to let's say now, for example, the African indigenous way of doing things, for example.
Yeah, basically, that's the idea. Yeah, basically, that's the idea.
So, and this Umbundu says that, yes, the philosophy of Umbundu and the Oshuambo in your language, it's a kind of the way we do things, like in our customer law, our customer traditional norms, way of doing things, compassionate. Even if you relate it to the International Justice or Court of Justice,
yeah,
for example, in terms of how you can, you know, because we are already giving those some of those principles.
Mm.
You cannot kill. You must love your neighbor,
yeah,
as yourself. In fact, not even before. You see, those are some of the norms and principles and customs that we were associated to.
Mm.
Even if it comes to this, this one is impunity,
yeah,
this one is above the law, all those things. If you talk about the United Nations, it's true.
Yeah.
They are talking about the Burkina Faso in those countries that want to withdraw from this International Court of Justice.
They actually withdraw. They immediately.
It's just right. Maybe SADC is the time for SADC and all these even big countries to start withdrawing from that kind of a platform that is just there to protect the interests of the West.
Yeah.
What else are we getting there as Africans, even Namibia? Look at, it's just now because France has declared that no, Palestinian people must be recognized, whether it's legal or economic or whatever the case might be, because people are dying there. What is the International Justice of Court doing?
Yeah.
Our presidency, our country sent even Dalseb went there. They presented a case before that court. It's a court of unfair. It's a biased court.
Yeah.
And the people are dying there. France in there declare, no, let's recognize these people. But people are still dying.
Yeah. Mm.
What is it that we should do? Should we demonstrate, maybe instead of window here, and they say all the shop must close until Palestinians and the Tumbos voice is heard there? How many times are we complaining about these things? Huh?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's not about whatever. So let me jot my points. Let me just conclude. The indigenous way of mechanism.
Yeah.
We have got our indigenous law. Maybe France will come in now and tell us that what did we propagate, what were we advocating in our university before the colonial regime came in Africa?
Yeah.
All right. What were our institutions in terms of our university, Obakung, Sudan, go there in Ethiopia? We do not want this kind of politics, man. Our people are dying and our children are dying. How long are we going to wait?
All right, Uncle Bwana.
Thank you very much, my brother.
No, thank you for coming.
God bless you so much.
For your contribution. All right.
Thank you. God bless.
All right. Well, there's a passion there in the voice of Uncle Bwana. So, yeah. So, do you see the withdrawal from the ICC as a bold step towards true African sovereignty? Or a dangerous move to open the door to impunity. The other thing is when this leader talk about neo-colonialist repression, does that resonate with you? Eh? Perhaps based on your own historical experiences or what you're observing, what else you're observing the global power dynamic that is happening right in front of our eyes. And what are your thoughts on the idea of indigenous mechanisms for justice? So could that work? Could they work? Or are they more likely to be used as a shield? It could be. In some instance, could be used as a shield in some cases. Igrafem, welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Hi, Mr. How are you?
I'm fine, man. Yourself?
Good, good.
Yeah.
You see what your topic did to Uncle Bwana there?
I can feel it. It wrapped him up, and for right reason as well. Sometimes we get really worked up by these kind of issues. Yeah.
Mm. The International Criminal Court. Who does it benefit? Yeah. If you look at it, who does it benefit? And I think. When we look at some of these things, we look at Africa and see how can we be careful that we do not become the victimizer of our own people when we remove ourselves from these kind of criminal courts.
Yeah.
But my question is this: why can't Africa have its own tribunal to deal with African issues? Why do we always need somebody else to take care of us? Because look, when you come, we don't even have a seat, a permanent seat at the United Nations, we make up the largest number,
yeah,
of country at that
National Assembly, yeah,
exactly. So at the end of the day, who does it benefit? The International Criminal Court has a case against
Russia.
Russia, but Russia is not a member. It's not a member.
Yeah.
Even when South Africa made that case against Israel is not a member.
Yeah.
But how come there is no case against Tony Blair and George Bush when they, because the evidence said that they lied when they invaded Afghanistan and Iraq.
Mm.
The evidence are there. So who can be trialed and who determine who can be trialed or not?
And the other thing is that the statistic of 32 out of 33 cases involving African countries is something that you cannot refute that the evidence is really of bias. It's kind of like it's bias. Why is 32 out of 33 cases? you know, involve African countries.
Exactly. And usually what people will say is that, yes, it's because African countries are the one that actually requested for the establishment of the international court.
Yeah.
But to tell the truth, Hawaii was not able to do its work. Mm-hmm. Because even though the mandate started in 1950, the international criminal court only started being especially intensified during the 1989 to 1994, around that particular area. But why is it only Africans that are being persecuted? How come the International Criminal Court is not even pushing the agenda of Namibia getting its reparation, saying that, look, yes, there was a reparation for the Israelites. They even got the land to reestablish their own country. How come there's nothing for African country?
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, we say that we are equal, but it seems that some people are actually more equal than others. Exactly. No one is saying anything about the United States when it provoke other countries. We see this Chinese-Taiwan situation, but how many times have Americans' warplanes used to go into Chinese water deliberately, looking for a response from what?
Yeah.
From the Chinese. And the fact that we have Israel who is bombing Palestine, even with the determination to annex Gaza,
yeah,
the Gaza Strip, the Americans still continue supporting Israel. Why is it so?
Mm.
So those are the critical questions that we should ask. Why is it when it comes to Africa, everybody wants to put us in order, but no one wants to put anybody else in order? So at the end of the day, Mr. Oshavelli,
yeah,
whatever law that we have, whatever tribunal or whatever courts that we have in place, that particular law, it's only effective depending on who do I know and who do I rub shoulders with.
Yeah, so maybe why now these three countries, they more aligning with themselves to Russia, who also actually in the same situation as them, because they're kind of like preempting their own scrutinies from, because Mali is already being invested since 2013. Yeah. So, and this, now my question is also this, you know, and I understand, as I said, those are two views that we can look at, an advert. Can we, don't go out. Let's just quickly go to the ad and then come back. Okay.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. The International University of Management (IUM) is excited to announce that applications for the 2026 academic year are now open. Explore a wide range of qualifications across our dynamic faculties and schools. Faculty of Environmental Management and Sustainability Sciences, Faculty of Health Sciences, Faculty of Information and Communication Technology, Faculty of Strategic Management and Business Administration, School of Primary Education, School of Secondary and Postgraduate Education, Postgraduate Studies, and the Graduate School of Business. Whether you are in Ventuk, Kurankuru, Enana, Ongwediva, or Walvis Bay, your future starts at IUM. For more information, visit www.ium.edu.na or call us at 061-433-6000. Go ahead, make the right choice, and step into your future with IUM, a Namibian university dedicated to its people's future.
All right. So now, my one thing that I wanted to maybe to have your opinion is that, you know, these three countries has also withdrawn from ECOWAS, the original bloc. So now, do you see this withdrawal either from the ICC and also from ECOWAS as a way to maybe to enforce reform, because maybe the institution, they aren't addressing the realities of these countries? And there's also a fear that also a move that opened the door to impunity. So what is your perspective on that?
I'm not thinking about impunity right now in that particular door. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at these countries that are trying to liberate themselves. What they are doing, they're actually liberating themselves. Mm-hmm. And to make matters worse, they use ECOWAS, which was basically led by the Nigerians.
Yeah.
I think they're the one that have the chair. And the Nigeria was even talking about attacking this particular country. And it's a pity that one of our own has an issue with our own liberating themselves.
Yeah.
And Malcolm X asked a question, who told you to hate yourself so much that you want to rub your shoulder with those that have never benefited you to the point where you even want to turn against your own brothers?
Mm.
That's why even the United States, the person that they put there, that particular commander, it's one that looks like us. At the end of the day, these are countries that are liberating themselves from the particular tech that they had with France.
Mm.
And France is holding on to that. Look what's happening to the French economy right now, when some of these countries have actually withdrawn. What's happening to its economy? Because they've been surviving from this particular tech that they made all these Francophone countries signed. That's what helped France to survive and become where it is today. And some of us, I'm sure, we are busy. We like wearing all these kind of French brand names, forgetting how much our people have to remain stagnant and unable to develop, just so that France can have an advantage.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you actually punish me saying that we are the one who taught you how to use a fork? They call it civilization. We are the one who gave you the idea of having electricity.
Mm.
So that is completely wrong. But so these particular countries, they are liberating themselves. And when you want to liberate yourself, you want to make sure that you stand at a position where you stand alone and you build yourself from within, so that you become very strong. Mm. But to a point where you understand that, but if you understand that you have you have not enough strength to be able to withstand what might come.
Yeah.
You lean towards someone who, as the saying says, that an enemy to my enemy becomes my friend.
Yeah.
So you lean yourself to the one that you understand you have a commonality in dealing with this particular person, so that you can win.
Yeah. Mm.
At the end of the day. So that's why they decided to go towards
Russia,
the Eastern Bloc.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, I need to win, and I need to make sure that I win by all means. Mm. And I know that I might not be able to win alone. So what they're doing, they're actually doing a good thing.
Yeah.
Because if the international court was actually there to support the Namibian country, they would have asked the United Nations and everybody else who's benefiting from the minerals of Congo, saying to tell, because right now, we have this situation whereby Kagame is going into the Goma regions, and actually in the region where these minerals are, taking out these minerals. And Kagame is saying that these things are only coming through my country, but I'm not the one who's taking them out. How do they come through your country? To the point where even Tshisekedi himself asked the Americans, saying that, why don't I have an agreement with you so that I can sell to you directly instead of you getting it through Kagame?
Yeah.
At the end of the day. So the United, the International Criminal Court was actually just. They would have actually called out the United States and everybody else who's benefiting from this mineral, that you are exploiting people. And therefore, we are also going to take actions against you, because humanity is not being uplifted because of your involvement in dealing with these kind of minerals.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, Mr. Osheveli, in conclusion, I stand with the three countries, and I support them, and I wish that all of us can actually be able to liberate ourselves and follow suit.
All right. Thanks for coming through and your contribution this morning. Yeah.
All right. Bye.
Great. Very good morning to you. Our time is 6 minutes past the hour of 9. So what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on the idea of indigenous mechanisms for justice? Could they work, or are they more likely to be used as a shield in some cases, possibly? All right. So think about that. Give us a call and share your perspectives. So Our number, the number to call is 08. We are in Ondango Studio, 08333-66091. 08333-66091. Yeah, so while we're waiting for your calls, let's quickly touch on the practicalities, okay? Good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Mike.
Yes.
Sorry, my sincere apology.
It's okay.
For coming late. Just it has been a long time I've heard from Abinel.
From who?
Abinel.
Abinel, yeah, yes, true.
The one who just called. I think he's calling from the coast.
Yeah.
He's my mentor. In fact, first is my son and is my mentor. And the only thing that I think I forgot, which he reminded me, my son reminded me, I might be pronouncing his name wrongly, but you forgive me, he's a spiritual man. So, listen, the issue of, just like what he said, we just really need to support. Because if you look at, I understand the people were saying Rwanda is doing good, and we appreciate that. Because the genocide that was taking place in Rwanda,
yeah,
he was able, by the guidance of the masses, to avenge that genocide that took place. And we congratulate and we thank God for his servant leadership in that area.
Yeah.
The other thing is that when you see the mineral exploitation in DRC, and I think you know very well about the roots, the indigenous African customer traditional norms,
yeah,
where you started. No wonder if we would not have Nyoma and Mugambe there to avenge that war that was coming from DRC, the laboring in Angola to Namibia, like the late Russia machine. That war, maybe by now, even the liberation struggle and all these things, the Westerns might have taken power already.
Yeah.
But now I'm not going to go to that level. In my conclusion is that I just want to support what Abinel said there. It's fine. He is denying because he has been the supporters of the exploitation of these minerals.
Yeah.
And then the reason why people have died, even those regions where the 23 whatever labels are up. Is it not because of him?
Yeah.
And he has been denying that he has never been supporting these 23 laborers. Please, if you want to put impunity there before us, because our law, our domestic legal instruments, or international convention, or whatever you want to ascribe to, we are not saying that because you have committed this crime, you should be tried to death. But you must acknowledge.
Yep.
You must acknowledge your sin. When you acknowledge and God to be able to forgive you, you repent genuinely.
Yeah.
Not that people are still dying in DRC, bro.
Okay. Anga Bana, let's see what others have to say.
Please, man, let's do these things, man. And let's not waste the effort of Minetumbo and others.
All right.
Where our children are dying there.
Yeah.
Good.
Great, man. So. 08333-66091. 08333-66091. So you can come through. And what I was saying, let's quick touch upon the practicalities. So a country's withdrawal from the ICC isn't immediate. It officially takes effect 1 year after the UN is notified. So this gives a year a year for potential diplomatic intervention and or for the dust to settle. So, however, these three nations have started their have stated their withdrawal is immediate, which challenges now the established procedures. So, and this could lead to further legal and probably diplomatic frictions also. So now, and consider this practice becoming, if you consider this practice becoming a model, you know, if those three countries successfully, let's say, for example, successfully leave and establish an alternative just system that are widely accepted or at least not heavily criticized internationally, could this embolden other nations, you know, perhaps even in Africa or elsewhere, or to follow suit? So the other things the other caller said is that why don't we start our ICC of Africa? The ICC of Africa can't. Why don't we don't have our own ICC in Africa? Okay. So I think that could be. Could this become a model? Because this is kind of like now. Could this become a model in a practice becoming a model? This practice become a model? So, because the other thing is this, the military coup, when it becomes, as I said, I'm asking, did consider this practice becoming a model? Is that because sometimes, especially in Western Africa, they realize that, well, democratic government don't really work, you know, to bring changes. And therefore, that's why we always have this coup after coup, after coup d'etat, you know. So now, it's just something I'm throwing there to think about, because this is not just a regional issue. It's about the future of international justice itself. So this is about the future of international justice itself. So just to sum up all what we have probably saw, and maybe exhausting the topic, you're most welcome to come through. So the core of our discussion today on this is that the action, what is the action? The action is that Burkina Faso, Mali, Niger are withdrawing from the ICC, citing bias and ineffectiveness and seeking their own indigenous justice mechanism. Okay? Now, so those that the argument for is that this is a legitimate accession of sovereignty, you know, a rejection of neocolonialism and a desire for justice relevant to their own context. So the ICC disproportionately focus on Africa lends credence to this view. So because if you look at 32 out of 33, definitely that definitely lends credence to this view. Okay. Now, the argument against is this move a risk creating impunity for grave crimes, especially given these are military-led government facing accusation themselves. So indigenous mechanism could serve as a shield rather than a tool for justice. So the ICC, despite flaws, well, in the understanding, is to provide essential global accountability when national system fail. But, well, has that been the case? So that's also the question. Now, the context, this withdrawal are part of the broader, I think, are part of the broader political shift. So with these nations strengthening ties with Russia and distancing themselves from the West. So, yeah. So first, this reminds us that international relations are constantly shifting. So it's just that what is the takeaway for us here in Namibia? What is our takeaway from this? Is that it reminds us that international relations are constantly shifting. What seemed like a distant event in West Africa can be a symptom of larger global changes in power dynamics. And the very concept of justice and governance, that's very important. So, secondly, it poses a question for all nations. How do we balance national sovereignty with international commitment to human rights and accountability. So it's a tightrope walk, and different countries will approach it differently, I think. So, and as these Sahelian nations forge their new path, so the world will be watching. So will their indigenous mechanism truly deliver justice for victims? Or will they become a symbol of accountability evaded? So those are things that we, this will withdrawal, will this withdrawal weaken the international legal order or spark a necessary reform? Could be, you know, and these are questions we will continue to unpack here on Unpacking the Day in the days to come. So as this, yeah, progress. So on this segment, on this topic, so you're most welcome to come through again, still on that. Our telephone number, 08333-66091. 08333-66091. So we'll be back after this.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Good morning, Namibia, and welcome back. Welcome back to Unpacking the Day. Our time is 19 minutes past the hour of 9. So we're going to move on. This is your daily show that dive into the stories shaping our world and our continent. And I'm Michael Chiavelli. And in this segment now, so we're going to take a step further now. So take a step further. In this segment, we are zooming in. We are zooming in on a conversation that has been brewing for years, but has recently been amplified on the global stage. Now it has been amplified on the global stage, and it's about power, it's about representation, it's about, and frankly, it's about justice. So it's about justice. So we are talking about Africa's persistence and increasingly vocal demand for a permanent seat on the United Nations Security Council. Now, you might be thinking, another UN speech, another call for reform. What is new? You may think, okay, what is new now? Well, the core message is not new. Okay, the core message is not new. What is escalating is the tone, the unity, and the timing. That's what is escalating. So, our story comes from a recent report surrounding the 7th C10 summit, held on the sidelines on the UN General Assembly in New York. Now, this wasn't just a casual meeting. It was a powerful declaration from African leaders, okay, making the 20th anniversary of two crucial documents from the African Union. So the Ezurini Consensus and the CILTA Declarations. Now, this is the 20th anniversary of those two crucial documents. And this document, dating back to 2005, from African collective position on how the UN Security Council should look. So, it has been 20 years. Okay? So, what exactly are they asking for? Well, we know it's simple terms. In simple terms, Africa wants at least two permanent seats on the Security Council, complete with veto power. Complete with veto power and five additional non-permanent seats. Five additional non-permanent seats. Now, think of the Security Council as the UN most powerful club. This is the UN most powerful club, the one that makes binding decisions on international peace and security. So, and right now, as someone has said, Africa, a continent of over a billion people and a significant chunk of the world's nation, is on the outside looking in when it comes to permanent membership. So for now, as I said, for almost how many years now? So now I want us to unwrap this, okay? So maybe the question we're looking at, we can ask is, why this strong language? Why now? Now, leaders like our own, okay? Our own president, President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah, were very, very crystal clear. They were very, very crystal clear. She stated, and I'm paraphrasing here, so that Africa is not asking for charity or handout. It is a demand for its rightful place. Eh? A place at the table where decisions affecting global peace and security are made. Decisions that very often they concern Africa itself. But they are not sitting there. They are not there. So this is not about symbolic gesture, according to our president. It is about fundamental justice and ensuring future generations inherit a more inclusive world. Strong words, you know. So there was also President João Manuel Lorenzo of Angola, speaking as the chairperson of the African Union. So echoed this sentiment with more sharp historical demographic backing. So he highlighted a stark contradiction. Africa is the continent most frequently discussed at the Security Council, yet it has no permanent representation. Now, he argued that a council treating such a large, important continent unequally simply cannot be credible. Now, imagine this. You have a major stakeholder in any negotiation. A continent with youthful, dynamic population, nearly half under 20, you know, 20 age. Now, as Lorenzo pointed out, and yet its voice is not permanently stamped in the decision-making structure. So that, he contends, undermines the very legitimacy of global governance. So, now the core argument boiled down to this, okay? Africa is no longer a passive observer. So we are not just sitting down and looking at, you know, decision made for us. It's a major global player with a significant population, diverse economies, and a crucial role in a global stability. So we have a crucial role in a global stability because, I mean, when we send peace forces to different, you know, to anywhere in the globe. So we are a major global player. Now they say now to exclude it from permanent decision-making power on the UN security is an, as someone put it, anachronism. It's anachronism. It's a historical injustice that needs rectifying. Yeah? So, and crucially, there's a strong emphasis on unity. So the C10 group is the committee of the 10 countries which were tasked with advocating for this reform. Namibia is also included. So now has reportedly seen no defection in 20 years. They haven't seen any change. And that is a remarkable staying power, essentially, especially given to the complexity of international diplomacy. So I think something needs to be done. But let's not just accept this claim at face value, okay? Let's not just accept it on the face value. This is unpacking the day. So we need to poke. You know, we need to poke. We need to prod. We need to question. All right? So first, let's look at the historical context. Okay? Now, the UN was founded in 1945, after World War II. Yeah? Yes, after World War II. Now, the current permanent member of Security Council, the permanent five, China, France, Russia, the United Kingdom, and the United States. Now, reflect the power dynamic of that era, you know? So, at that time, many African nations were still under colonial rule. They didn't have the independent voice to shape the UN founding charter. So the argument is that the current structure is an outdated relic. It's an outdated relic, a hangover from a colonial past that no longer represent the reality of the 21st century. So that's why the reform is imperative. So it's imperative according to the C10 group, the committee of 10 countries tasked with the advocating for this reform. They said it is imperative. So now the increased representation means a stronger voice in shaping global norms, you know, policies, on conflict resolutions, you know, development aid, climate actions, and so much more. So it means that when now you have this increased representation, it means a stronger voice. So it means issues vital to the continent, especially for us in Africa. So those issues that are vital to our continent are less likely to be overlooked because we are on the table. Eh? So they are less likely to be overlooked or decided for us rather than with us, with Africa, because we are also on that table. Now, you have to think of on the ongoing conflict and the humanitarian crisis across the continent, DRC, Sudan, the Sahel. So having a permanent seat would give Africa more agency in managing this situation. So that's the goal. That's the whole idea. And what about the existing P5? Okay? The permanent five. When I say P5, it's the permanent five. Now, this is where it's getting interesting. Okay? Now, the US, UK, France, and China have all expressed some level of support for UN reform, including expanding the Security Council. Now, however, there is a significant but. When it comes to permanent seat with veto power, their enthusiasm tend to diminish. You know, when it comes down to a permanent seat with a veto power, so their enthusiasm actually tends to diminish. So now imagine a scenario where a new permanent member, so think about this, just where you have a new permanent member, perhaps representing a block of nations with different strategic interests. Now, could veto a decision, now this new member, they could actually veto a decision that a current permanent member strongly support. That is the really sticking point why they are not so very keen with permanent seat with veto power. So that becomes a sticking point because this new member could actually, you know, veto a decision that the current permanent member strongly support. And that's what they don't want. Eh? Now, let's consider the veto power specifically, okay? Now, this is the sword of Damocles hanging over the Security Council. So now that the veto power allows any of the permanent five to block any substantial resolution. No. Yeah. So they can block any resolution. Substantive resolution. So any something substantive is, you know, they can block that. So now the critic argues, they're arguing that this power often leads to some sort of paralysis where, especially with geopolitical rivalries, preventing decision action, you know, it's actually preventing the decisive action. And we have seen that with the issue in Israel and Palestine, where resolutions are vetoed by US and then there isn't any decisions. You understand? So it paralyzes because of that geopolitical rivalries. So it's kind of, you know, America fighting, you know, China. When the two elephants are fighting, is the grass that suffers. So people that are suffers are in the Middle East, and on that level, they're fighting, is Russia fighting against, you know, United States or China fighting against, you know? So that's what now the critics are saying. That power often leads to paralysis, you know, where with this geopolitical rivalries, you know, preventing now decisive actions. And we see that. Where are we? It has been for 2 years now, and nothing happened. And we're not just talking about Palestine. We also talk about, you know, countries like Sudan and DRC. How many, you know? So, yeah, some proponent, those who are now proponent for the reform, want to see African gain permanent seat with veto power. Arguing it is the only way to ensure true equality. That's the only way. So, and others might suggest a compromise. There are those who might suggest a compromise, perhaps a permanent seat without veto power or a reformed veto system. But the AU stance is very clear. They are very clear. Two permanent seats with full veto power. So they are very, very, very clear on that. Now, so let's look at the counter argument or there may be the obstacles. Okay. So the most significant one is that reforming the UN Security Council requires amending the UN Charter. And to do that, you need a 2/3 majority vote in the General Assembly, which sounds achievable because, you know, many members in that assembly could actually vote for. So it sounds achievable. But, and this is a big but, you also need the ratification of 2/3 of member states. Now, including all five permanent members of the Security Council as well. So this means any single one of the permanent five can block the entire reform process. So, and given their vested interest, given their interest, it's unlikely they would easily agree to dilute their own power. It's impossible. Now, so that's the challenge. Now, furthermore, the question of which African, there's also now the whole ideas of which African nation would get this permanent seat. Now, Africa is not monolith. It's not monolith. So there are diverse economic powers, political systems, a regional bloc. Now, would it be North Africa or Southern Africa, West or East? Which one? So we have to devise a system of who will occupy this permanent seat. Now, this is a complex internal discussion. I think it's a complex internal discussion for the continent itself. And now, the Ezurini, the consensus and seat declaration are clear on at least two. So those are there. They are very clear on those documents, are at least very clear on those, at least two. But the specificity, the specifics of selection remain a sensitive issue. So how those two would be selected still actually remain a sensitive issue within the internal discussion of the continent itself. Now, and what about the women's aspect? Because that's what our president now was pushing. So that's another area. What about the women aspect? Now, the president, 1981, our president specifically linked this call for representation to the anniversaries of the Beijing Conference on Women and UN Resolution 1325. So, which emphasized women's participation in peace and security. Now, she argued that as African pushes for equal representation, women must also be at the decision-making table. So she said women must also be at the decision-making table. So now, this adds another vital layer to the reform debate. It's added another vital layer to the reform debate. It is not just about geographically representation, but also about gender inclusivity. So it's also now about gender inclusivity. So this is where we want to hear from you also, you know, our listeners. This is a complex issue with strong argument on all sides. So do you believe Africa's demand for permanent seat of the UN Security Council is a matter of justice that cannot be ignored? That cannot be ignored anymore? Do you believe that it's a matter of justice and this cannot be ignored anymore? Or do you think the current structure, maybe you think, well, the current structure, despite its flaws, is the best way, is the best we can manage. And that reform is too, maybe it's too difficult or could create more problems than it solves. So what do you think? And what are your thoughts on the veto power? Should Africa demand it? Or is it an outdated mechanism that all permanent members should reconsider? So maybe we need to reconsider a different way of looking of making decision rather than having, you know, a veto system. Is it an outdated, you know, probably mechanism that all member maybe need to reconsider? So what do you think? So you can give us a call at 08-333-66-091, 08-333-66-091.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level.
Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the Eye.
A very good morning to you. Our time is about 41 minutes past the hour of nine. We still have about 19 minutes. Yeah, so we are looking at C10, most an African. This is a committee. There's a country of 10 that were responsible for, advocating for a reform of Security Council. So they want a seat on the Security Councils. Now, we have two main viewpoints here. So broadly speaking, okay, two main viewpoints. Now, viewpoint one. Now, this is the position championed by the C10 and most African leaders, the moral and demographic, if you like, imperative. Now, the core assertion here is that the current Security Council structure is an historical injustice. All right? Good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Yes, Admiral, how are you?
I'm fine. And yourself?
I'm okay, my brother.
Yeah. So welcome to Unpacking
the Day. Oh, you're okay now?
Yeah, yeah.
Are you okay?
I'm all right.
So, all right.
Yeah, no, I'm all right. And thanks for asking.
Yeah, because we was whirling, man. Like, this guy was
when it became 2 days, 3 days, and
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. But anyway, we know that our immune system is very strong.
Yeah, no,
that 2 days, 3 days, you are okay.
Yeah, no. So yeah, it needed sometimes. We overworked ourselves at one point, and then sometimes it's your body catch up with you and said, hey, you are overdriving, you are speeding, you know.
Yeah.
Reduce the speed, man.
It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, when I come to free country, man, so yeah. I want to start. The free country, I think they are liberating themselves out of
they
the
are?
Colonial era, which we find ourselves.
They are doing what? Sorry, I didn't get that.
They are liberating themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
In the new colonial called democracy.
Yeah, it's about time. It's about time, really.
Yeah, exactly. Because remember one thing that I think we as a Namibian, South Africa, Zimbabwe, we're supposed also to get out of this.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't work in our favor.
Mm.
Because if you check me, the way we save in Angola, my friends, those people are dying with their lands. They're having their own land. Here in Namibia, most of us, we are just homeless people.
Mm.
When I'm saying that is that because you never know what tomorrow brings.
Exactly.
Because we are living in the end, yeah, but we are lending, you are citing a land for 99 years when it comes to the north. And then now we have private people, we are having private land, in this commercial.
And some of them are foreigners. Yeah.
I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Foreigners, well, people, some of them, they're not even living in Namibia. They are deciding where they are, and then they are having their private game here in Namibia. And that's what you call independence. How? Mm. Is what I'm saying? That I think the Zimbabweans, they are supposed even to go ahead. Because they are waiting the sanction. What's the point for you to go following things where you know that it doesn't work for you?
Yeah.
Because next time you heard that the Zimbabwean government is going to go to the court against the woman. What? All that thing about human rights and what so on. Because the way I'm looking at it is that when you look at the way Burkina Faso and Niger and Mali, they are taking themselves out of that poverty called democracy.
Yeah.
Is that when they are started doing their own thing without a foreign interference? And that is supposed to be a way of African.
Mm. But I think also Africa has to come up with their own judicial system. How would I say that? How do we say, for example, because we understand the context in which the reality of what is happening in Africa. So so we should have our own justice system, you know.
We do.
Because the other one is more European centric, you know.
But you know, we have the tribunal court.
Yeah.
Just behind the, I think it's Attorney General. There's an office there for them in Windhoek. But did you see what is happening in DRC?
Yeah.
Did you see anybody saying anything?
Yeah.
Appointed from the, in SADC? They're all quiet. Election has been manipulated left and right. Nobody you see coming out say no. You guys need to go back to the election again because I think it was no transparency. No, they are covering up because the democracy which we are having is more the people who are on the table.
Yeah.
And they do whatever because they have immunity. They can fly out to go to Sweden, then they live there with their family. And then we can have a chaos here, me and you. We are already like a poor kid. We are the one who are going to suffer. And after the conflict, then you can come back, claiming again to be on top. And this is what is happening in Africa, mostly. And because they are, even when they are stealing money here, they know exactly that nobody's going to touch them in the name of democracy.
I think something that we need to look at, now maybe people need to discuss is that, is there a need of, because there are always this global institution. I understand sometimes they are very, very important. Let's say, for example, in terms of WHO, you know.
Yeah.
So in some way you need global expertise to help you. Should we have these global independent bodies and we can choose to consult them rather than be part of them, you know? So because now when we become part of those, we then obliged to obey and follow
exactly what they are saying
and of those international law, of those international bodies.
Which I think your point is very correct, because we don't need these people us to be a part of them. But we need to consult them when we need them.
Yeah.
Yeah, because look here now, if you remember the issue of our former, the late president, he was saying, no, let us, the medicine, not become apartheid. Because, first of all, they are looking up their own people before they send the leftover to us. That's the time of corona, if you remember. But the United Nations is the one who is doing this. if you look now, the war between Russia and Ukraine, how United Nations was so vocal. Then the war started with Israel and the Palestinian. You never ever see them. They always just say, no, it's you're committing, but they never take action. But for them to move in to destroy Libya, it was quick. Didn't even take them for 6 months or 3 months. Yeah, just eventually, quickly, then they send the command, or they send their spy, in the name of what? United Nations.
Yeah, of course.
Agency.
They know where, they have all the technology, they know where you are. Yeah.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. We are going through because of what? Those guys. And we are the one, we are shooting ourselves, because look where now, even like when it comes to environment, we are paying things which we are not supposed to be. It's not our problem. They create their own problem because they are having what? Their forefathers, they burn off. That's why they don't have even wild animal. But now, they make us also African to contribute to that CFA, what you call this ocean layer. You see? This is a problem, I think, as Africans, we need to wake up.
But are we also not risking to isolate ourselves? As long, especially if...
No. You have Asia. We don't need these people anymore. I think we have Asia. And Asia is the one, like in Namibia even, you can see there how we are trading with Chinese.
Yeah.
And it's not only Chinese that side. I think even the Russians, they're having a big market for us. And looking at even the other country, Indian and so on. Because now, even if the business which we are doing them with them, it's not really friendly to us.
Yeah.
Because the moment you are, let me say now you are changing, you are selling your things to Britain. It's like they don't care because it's like they are paying for $10, your stuff.
Yeah.
Because their money is they're having a what? Equivalent and what you call it? They are up there. It's like if you are changing like a, let me say you are changing like a 10 pound to $1 million, how much you get? That is how it is. But eventually, if we want also to move from that, is where we start also. Because now is the time. If it, I'm telling you, if this time is, if there was a lack of life, the lack of Robert Mugabe, Gaddafi was alive also, and the lack of, maybe even like Idi Amin.
Yeah.
Because Idi Amin was just dead to them. But to, I'm telling you. No. I'm telling you.
No way.
we can be somewhere else. I'm telling you because it take a man. Because sometimes you don't to be good to everybody. No. And that's why the African leaders, they are soft to them, but they are hard to us.
Yeah.
That's why today we are having even, that's why if you see how the foreigners are getting to Namibia, it's very easy. Sometimes they come with what without a visa. But to their country, we need to have a visa. Isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a problem with you. We African, we don't see it that we can create our own economy in Africa. Because what Angola has, Namibia doesn't have.
I think that's a point where if we can only be really be, we can only be a force if first of all, we establish a foundation where we are in a position of strength, you understand, as an African. So
exactly.
if we're doing this in silos, in this group and that.
Yeah, but one by one, it will not work.
It will not work eventually.
Yeah.
They will find a way to divide you, you know?
Okay. Oh, and that is what happened. We never learn from the history.
So, and first of all, we need to really establish, not only talk about, you know, because some of us, when we listen to this talk and think, what are we doing systematically? What are we doing in terms of policy? What are we doing in terms of practically, you know, to make, are we funding our own project? Because immediately we're running for Europe, we're running for America to fund.
For bailout, for what?
Yeah.
You know, Mike, you know, even the city which you are crying for it. What if somebody, okay, now the seat is given, and what?
Yeah.
What then? Because remember, I don't know how many seats are available there, but if I know very well, Britain and they're having seats, Germany they're having seats. Yeah. And now, look at our continent, a big continent that we doesn't have. Now we are, come on, man.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense even we get a seat. What is that going to help?
Yeah. So, for first of all, we have already this internal fighting. Who should have the seat? You know?
I'm telling you.
Yeah. So
it is going to break a chaos again.
And they look at that. They want the seat, and they don't even know who should take the seat.
Who to get it? Huh?
No.
And what is the point? Even okay, let us give it to them. Then what? Now we are going to fight against who's going to get that seat.
Yeah.
You see, it will be a squabble again. Ah, no, man. But yeah. I think I just hope that things will work out in South Africa in our favor, like the NK, maybe with Julius Malema in the next election. Because those South Africa things, they will move us somewhere. Because the way we are,
yeah,
especially like Namibia, I think they are just everywhere. we don't have any stand. We don't have any big brother. Because even South Africa, they are scared of us now. Yeah. The way we do things. Because remember, the Botswana president, they said, no, NATO, you have to go. And there's a lot of talking points, especially when you come to, if you're listening to the SABC and the other radio. It's like, now Namibia, they build a what? They have American embassy, but they just indulgent. They don't know what is inside. And now, what does it tell that? Where does South Africa stand with us? Even if our, we say it's our big brother.
There are things that we should be proud about as a Namibian. Definitely when we talk about stabilities, you know, we are a country that is able something that I wanted to talk about, the FDI, the president talking about actually changing the law to attract more FDI. So,
We are doing very well. Huh? Yeah. But the problem with us is that I hate even the slogan which we are using.
Yeah.
We are friend to all, none, and enemy to none. To no none. Man.
Yeah.
That one, it will put us in hot water one day.
Oh yeah, no, definitely.
Let me end up the mic.
So someone wants you to align with their priorities, and if you are not, you know, you might end up not with anybody.
Exactly. Because they know their friends, they have to learn it because you don't know. Because you are not the enemy to anybody.
Yeah, because they said, well, you are on the fence. You don't know where you want to be, so you're on the face. You end up nowhere.
I'm telling you.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. All right, mate.
Great, man. Thanks for coming through, yeah?
Sure.
All right. All right. Our time is about 58 minutes past the hour of 9. As I said, basically we have two viewpoints that we maybe can, you know, summarize up this. So this is the position championed by C10 and most African leaders, the moral and demographic imperative, that the core assertion is that the current Security Council structure is an historical injustice and a colonial legacy that no longer reflect a global realities. So Africa, with its massive populations, growing economies, and significant contribution to the global peace and security, often through peacekeeping, we normally sent, you know, peacekeeping forces, so deserve a permanent representation with a veto power. So that's the view. To deny this is to deny fairness, dignity, and effective global governance. So the claim is also that Africa's unity on this issue, maintained for two decades, demonstrates its seriousness and deservingness, if there's such a word. All right? Now, if the UN, you know, is to remain relevant, its structures must evolve. It must evolve. The sheer demographic weight of Africa is undeniable. So to exclude such a large segment of humanity from the highest level of global security decision-making, frankly, is undemocratic and unsustainable. In the end, somehow. Now, the second view is the perspective, though not explicitly voiced by any African leader in this piece, is the implicit reality of the international, you know, diplomatic landscape. So it's highlighted the immense difficult, if not impossibility, of achieving the necessary charter amendment due to the permanent five veto. So it's also implicitly questions whether adding more permanent members with the veto power would actually lead to more effective decision making or simply more hold up. You don't know. So some might argue that focusing on more non-permanent seats or reforming the way the Security Councils operate rather than its permanent membership could be more achievable path. So perhaps, something, a phased approach focusing first on more equitable, non-permanent representation, is more pragmatic. So both view have a merit, but the momentum and the moral clarity are increasingly with African demand for justice. So now the question is not if African deserve a seat, but how it will get it, and probably when. So now, quickly. So now we are. So what are the key takeaway on Africa's call for a seat on UN Security Council? So quickly before I give it to Mr. Franz. So it's a demand for justice, not charity. African leaders are framing this as a correction of historical wrongs and a matter of fundamental fairness, not a request for favors. So the current structure is seen as an anachronism, you know, anachronism World War II era. So secondly, for two decades, Africa has maintained a strong unified position through the Ezurini Consensus and Silte Declaration, so demonstrating a remarkable diplomatic cohesion. So this unity is seen as a crucial for any future success. So now, despite the strong moral and demographic argument, the practical reality of amending the UN Charter and the potential resistance from existing permanent members means the road to achieving two permanent seats with veto power is still a long and, I think, a long one, you know? So the conversation about global governance and representation is evolving, and Africa's voice is demanding to be heard. And not just in discussion, but in decision. So we will continue to track this story and unpack its implication for Namibia and the world. So that brings us to the end of this edition of Unpacking the Day. Let's do this again tomorrow at the same time here on Eagle FM. So from me, I will leave you. We'll continue to listen to our programming that are coming up through the course of the day. And coming up right away is Mr. Franz with Kutha Mosha. So, yeah, I wish you a good programming here on Eagle FM. So, until tomorrow, it's a bye now for me, Michael Shaveri.